Following was recorded in someone's basement. Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show, The Pro Show! With your hosts, Kyle Joseph and Mark Cote. Take it away, guys! Hey, I'm Kyle.
And my name's Mark.
And you're listening to the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show. The Pwo Show.
Stop calling it the Pwo Show.
I will never stop calling it the Pwo. Just like it's the Nuo, right? It's not the New World Order. It's the Nuo.
No one says that. You just woke up yesterday after a 10-year coma. How was your holidays, New Year's? What did you get up to?
Not much. Just played a little wrestling, watched a little wrestling, watched some movies, hang out with the family. The usual. What about yourself?
There you go. So my whole household has been sick as frick.
Well, I'm glad you're sitting right next to me.
I know.
Close
I'm not contagious. I'm not sick. So far, I've dodged it. Some good echinacea. So far, so good. But Amy's not doing so well. She's laid out in bed over the last couple of days. The kid was sick all last week through Christmas and everything. So it was a calm week, but a great week after all. All right. So with this, you know, today's show, even though there's been a lot going on, we didn't have a show last week, but I felt, you know, is it too cliche to do a year-end review show?
And it's never too cliche.
Then you kind of got to ask yourself, people are starting to do a decade review show.
I legitimately forgot that it was the end of the decade.
Well, I don't think people usually think the end of the last, because you could do that, it's like the end of the last 5 years, yeah. End of the last 20 years, but we're cliche. So, in today's episode, what we're going to do is we're not going to talk too much about the current product. We're actually going to go back and look on the last 10 years of some of our highlights, what happened through 2010 to the end of 2019, as well as some top moments in 2019, some top moments of the decade, and as well, you got to fit in those top fail moments.
Absolutely.
So we'll kind of go over, you know, each year individually and talk about a couple of things that happened. And we'd also love to hear what you guys think. So after you're done listening to the show, if you think of a moment that we might have forgotten, shoot us a little Twitter tweet at the PWO show.
Tweeting on the Twitter.
So let's take a very quick pause. And we actually have something a little different and new. We do have an ad. Would you call it an ad?
A public service announcement.
A public service announcement brought to you by NHTSA. So hold on tight right after the announcement. We will be back.
The following is a public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show. Hey, Mark! Would you ever drive drunk?
Me? Heck no, Kyle.
What if you're feeling good, you know, but you're not quite drunk?
Kyle, no matter what, it's never the responsible thing to do. It's never cool to drink and drive.
I knew you'd say that because buzz driving is drunk driving. And if you need to do something to feel okay to drive, you're clearly not okay to drive.
Kyle, did you know over 10,000 people lost their lives due to impaired driving fatalities in 2017 alone?
That is a very unfortunate statistic. Enjoying a night out and finding yourself oversharing or taking too many selfies? If the answer is yes, then you're noticing your buzzed warning signs.
So, Kyle, how do you know when you're buzzed and shouldn't be driving, you may ask? Let me tell you a couple. Over texting, maybe you're looking at your phone and maybe you sent an ex-girlfriend or maybe someone you have a crush on, maybe 20 texts in a row and they haven't replied. You're going a little crazy. Too many selfies in your camera roll of all the same picture. Oversharing, maybe a little lifted skirt, maybe a little zip down blouse, maybe showing a little bit more skin than you'd usually do. That can be some examples of, you know, how you might know you're too buzzed because of you're going to act differently than you normally would.
You're right. And sometimes when people get to that point, they feel like, oh, I just need to sober up, wake up a little bit. And so some of these tricks that they think are going to do it, just don't. Chugging water.
Chugging water?
Turning down the music so you can focus. Chewing gum or putting something like a snack, maybe some bread, crackers.
Popping some mints.
In order to soak up the alcohol, or drinking coffee, or the ever-popular splashing water in your face. Or, hey, even a little bit of light exercise. That stuff doesn't work.
Like jumping jacks?
Like jumping jacks. Or
I don't know about you, man, but if I'm ever drunk and I'm doing jumping jacks, I'm hurling to the ground.
There you go.
Real quick. But all joking aside, guys, the Buzz Driving Prevention Campaign aims to inspire recognition of familiar warning signs indicating impairment, and to have people take responsibility for their own decisions to get behind the wheel after having a few drinks.
When you spot your buzz warning sign, call a cab or a ride-sharing program or your best friend or your mom. Just call somebody when it's time to go home. Just don't get in that car and drive yourself. This is a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, and the Ad Council.
And us. And the us. PWO Show.
That's right. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thanks for listening, guys. Make sure to be responsible.
Welcome back, and once again, guys, during this holiday season, and frankly, any season, we don't need you drinking and driving, or even getting high and driving. It's the same thing. You're putting everyone's lives at risk.
Yeah, 100%. I've known people personally that have done it. Not to go into a massive story, but young man, he was 21 years old. This was before my time working at the bank. Very true story, not making this up. And this is not part of the ad or the PSA. But, you know, he was always the person to say, no, I'm good, like most people do. What ended up happening was one night, him and a couple of his buddies, just very cliche, went out drinking. He got behind the wheel, and he lives in Orleans. It was during the winter time. He ended up texting while drunk. He lifted up. It was just a little curve turn in the little suburban area. He missed it, and he went right into the electric box right beside the house, burnt the whole house down.
Wow.
And so he had his license suspended for many years. Everyone was okay, but he was not the same afterwards because he felt horrible. You know, so it's just, can't stress it enough. Kyle and I don't do it, and we don't associate ourselves with people that do it. I shouldn't say like that, but we don't respect people that do that. But just be responsible. I know this is kind of drawn on a little longer than I wanted it to be.
That's okay. That being said, okay, so we are here to break down the moments of the decade.
Right.
In chronological order.
Yeah.
Mark has done some fantastic research. I'm a half decade in, so I brought back to wrestling halfway through the year, the decade. So a lot of this is a refresher for me in terms of what I've missed. But Mark's done a great job in breaking down kind of a highlight of each of the 10 years that would make up a decade.
Yeah.
And so we'll break it down.
Yeah.
2010, Mark.
So 2010. So really, and once again, I can't stress enough on how some of these years were easier than other. And of course, this is strictly opinion based. You know, hearing other podcasts and reading other articles kind of inspired this. By no means is this ripped off by any website. I could see how maybe a lot of the people would have the same items, but this is kind of what we think. So number one, in 2010, the big moment was the end, you know, the heartbreak ending, as we call it. And HBK retired after losing his WrestleMania 26 match against The Undertaker after a great battle at WrestleMania 25, which even to this day had been known as one of the best matches of all time. And that is in my opinion as well. When you watch that match, it's absolutely an amazing, beautiful story and a match being told. To do it again the next year, leading up to it, you know, Triple H's kind of, you know, holding back Shawn Michaels. Shawn became obsessed with needing to beat The Undertaker. And if anything, that was a good several month build, and it ended up going to The Undertaker was like, no, I don't need to. I did it. Been there, done that, beat you. You know, and then it almost became convincing. And to then put on another amazing match, maybe it wasn't as good as the first one, but Shawn went as far as to say is, I will put my career on the line. If I can't beat you, I'm not worthy to be in a ring.
Is WrestleMania 25 the White Cowboy Shawn Michaels, or is
this one, the White Cowboy
Shawn Michaels. So 25 was the White Cowboy Shawn Michaels. Okay. That was kind of the good versus evil. Yeah, yeah, he came down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And no, it's just, it was a great story. You know, as a kid growing up, Shawn Michaels was one of my, you know, a character that got me into wrestling very much mm-hmm. in the early 90s. So I thought it was a great story.
Do you feel like him returning at whatever it was, Crown Jewel, Super Showdown?
Crown Jewel.
Not Super Showdown?
Or maybe Super Showdown. That's right. Super Showdown. I think you're right. Yeah.
Do you feel like that impacts this?
Nope.
Now, do you feel like that's because the match was so good?
No. I think it's because of everything Shawn built.
Okay.
I think there are, and I know exactly what you mean, I think there are some superstars, some wrestlers out there that they might not be Hall of Famers, but the way they leave is the way they need to be remembered, and then they can do something to mess that up. Shawn Michaels, this match, it was a beautiful ending to a story, but he could have also had a match against whoever on a Raw as his last match,
right.
And his career would have meant just as much.
Okay.
You know, if anything, for me, I enjoyed seeing him back at Super Showdown, and you know, only because he wanted to do it. And that's all that matters to me. You know what I mean? He wanted to do it. He did it. It was different. It was obviously a bald Shawn Michaels. But, you know, we got to see him one last time. And hey, here's the thing. He looked good.
Mm-hmm.
He looked good. It was hard. Triple H, you know, tore his pectoral muscle. Kane's mask fell off, you know. But when you look at, just watch it again and follow Shawn, he looked great. So, all right. So that's 2010. 2011, I deemed the summer of Punk. Or the year of Punk, I guess we can kind of say. Which also in 2011 was the same year we got the pipe bomb from CM Punk. So obviously the big, big thing with this year was CM Punk threatening to leave as his contract was coming to expire. You know, he wanted a shot at John Cena at Money in the Bank. Vince wants him to re-sign, but he kind of refuses to do so. Punk earns an opportunity to face John Cena for the WWE Championship at Money in the Bank. And throughout that whole storyline, Punk's like, I haven't made my decision. But then it turned very, very aggressively into, I'm not re-signing. I am going to take your title. And I'm going to bring it to other promotions. And he went even as far as saying, I'm going to go defend it on Ring of Honor. I'm going to bring it on New Japan Pro Wrestling. So obviously it brought a lot more realistic what Punk's personality to the storyline. And ended up being what happened. Punk defeat. And it was one of Punk's greatest matches that night. Him and Cena had an amazing match. Told an amazing story. And then there's that photo that you see where Punk's on the side at the audience. He's holding the belt up and he's blowing Vince a kiss. As it's kind of like, kiss your belt goodbye. That led to Punk not being on TV, and they completely sold the idea of, I'm not here anymore.
I kind of wish, though, based on hearing that he actually did show up on other promotions. I think I think it would have been a super neat experience, and I think it would have really solidified that, like, oh my god, this is really happening.
No, it's true. And you saw him at a couple of places. You saw him at a couple of Comic-Cons and stuff where he deemed to be. And obviously, it wasn't a very long time, but it was long enough where WWE needed to move on. So they had a tournament. I think it was 1 or 2 weeks long. The end of the tournament was John Cena versus Rey Mysterio. John wins. He's holding the belt up in the air. You know, the crowd's kind of going wild for him still at this point. But kind of like, ah, Rey as champion would have been cool too. But then all of a sudden, for the first time, is when we heard Cult of Personality. So it hits, but then it plays, but no one knows what's happening here. And Cena's literally just looking around going like, who is this, a new superstar coming? And then he walks out with his white shirt, red fist, lightning bolt, and he just steps out, belt around his waist, place goes wild. Walks up, face to face with Cena, takes off the belt, holds it up, huge crowd reaction. Cena holds the belt up, a good reaction, but less than, so they kind of, it was the ultimate show off champion versus champion. And as well, the pipe bomb was very historic for really, quote unquote, breaking down the fourth wall. You know, they gave Punk the mic and said, go out there and break the world. And he did. He talked about Colt Cabana. He talked about Vince McMahon's ego. He talked about, you know, the poster boy and John and, you know, the reason why people can't get by and people can't get in. And, you know, and then he gets his mic cut off. And it was historic because it's how he felt. So, what's your take on, you know, what are your early memories of punk during this time?
To be honest with you, I don't. No? I don't have any because I'm not till 2015. I really, other than the, I'd heard of punk, kind of through the grapevine and his, Straight Edge.
Right.
But I wasn't overly familiar with his in-ring performance. I do have heard the rumors that Vince knew exactly what he was going to say, whereas other people think, oh, he didn't, you know, he surprised Vince, but...
So it's funny. So have you ever watched the CM Punk documentary that WWE made?
No.
You should watch it. Definitely watch it. Because it talks about his career and his upbringing and him coming to the WWE. And it's very much not normal. Like, I love WWE. It's very him.
Yeah.
You know, ball cap, sweater.
Oh, wait. Maybe house. I have. Was during the lead up to UFC?
No.
It's not that one.
No. Okay. No, not that one. This is while he was still with WWE.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it's definitely great. And, you know, the thing with Punk was, you know, he influenced a positive change in the industry. Where... it wasn't about gimmicks. And even though at this point in WWE, you know, around 2011, the gimmicks were kind of still there, but they were more people were more themselves. Punk, you know, being yourselves and speaking how you feel and being honest with yourself really led to a lot of other big stars coming up and doing their own thing and being who they are, you know, and that's where it really, you know, the industry as a whole changed during that time. 2012, you know, one big moment that happened in 2012, a couple of big moments, but a big one was the return of Brock Lesnar, you know, after WrestleMania, when John Cena and The Rock faced each other, John Cena comes down, you know, he's kind of, you know, defeated and a little upset, and The Rock has defeated him first night and kind of comes down and says, hey, you know, I want to congratulate The Rock and everything else, and the crowd, there was a couple of Lesnar signs in the crowd, and you know, there was a couple people actually going like Lesnar, but it wasn't something that Brock was coming back, you know, like it was a little bit kind of like, ah, he's a little done with UFC, but will he even come back? He's a millionaire now. But then of course, you know, John Cena's asking The Rock to come out to congratulate him over his WrestleMania win after, especially two, The Rock and Cena had a year-long build-up from the previous Monday after two, because that year previous is when Cena lost to The Miz and didn't get the WWE Championship. But anyways, you know, the music we haven't heard since 2004 hits, an eight-year absence. The crowd I don't want to say it was a big pop. It was like a deep, holy shit moment. You know, and even the crowd chanting like, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. And because they knew with Brock being back, this kiddie era, you know, even though they're kind of still more PG, the mood changed. I don't want to necessarily say the era changed, but the mood changed, you know, in the arena. Kind of came in, F5'd Cena, kicked Cena's hat right out of the ring, and it almost meant a moment being like, this thing you're doing, Mr. Fruity Pebbles, take a back seat, and like, the Beast is back. And then of course, as well in 2012, that was the debut of The Shield, you know, at Survivor Series, November 18, 2012, when they came in and ran in and powerbombed Ryback, when it was Ryback versus CM Punk versus John Cena for the WWE Championship. So that was also a big moment. 2013, the Yes Movement was kind of born in 2013. Crazy to think that it's almost been 7 years now at this point. You know, Daniel Bryan was the ultimate underdog. He went through many different types of opponents, especially the Authority. The Authority was the one pain in his side. You know, and especially Daniel was a little more on his own, where Kane and him were a tag team together in Team Hell No. But now Daniel's kind of making his own solo move. You know, I want to do it. But Vince and the Authority, Triple H, and everyone else is kind of, no. You are unworthy, you're too small, and you are an unbelievable champion. You'll never be champion. And even if you were, you'd be a horrible champion. All of this came with massive crowd backing. Crowd backing that we hadn't seen in a very long time. Since, if anything, CM Punk. You know, years before. So this all led to a SummerSlam match against John Cena for the World Championship. No one gave Daniel Bryan. If anything, it's one of those matches where you kind of sat back and went, Cena will retain, but Daniel will have a good show. And it'll be good for Daniel Bryan. A loss will be his win. But he ended up winning. And it blew the roof off the arena. The unfortunate part was Triple H was the referee. Randy Orton comes down, as Randy Orton was the Money in the Bank briefcase holder at the time. Boom, pedigree from Triple H. Randy Orton comes in, 1, 2, 3, Randy Orton, new world champion. So it was short-lived. However, this was something that, you know, when it comes to a babyface, a really big babyface that the crowd is 100% behind, you know, the movement, as we call it, this was kind of the start and the born of Daniel Bryan to even what we know now through the ups and downs.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I was watching then, because I played whatever WWE 2K whatever it was with his story. So I did it last year before last, and seeing some of those moments. But I also remember the Yes Movement reaching out beyond wrestling, so sporting events, people were celebrating using it. And so for me, it was one of the first times since the Attitude Era that it transcended into other areas.
Oh, heck yeah.
And so...
Yeah, and especially, too, before then, he was doing the no gimmick.
Right.
You know, with Team Hell No with Kane. So, yeah, no, that's a really good thing to bring up, because, yeah, I remember in Major League Baseball games, and especially, too, in all, you know, NBA and everywhere, like, there's a bunch of wrestling fans as sports athletes, and, you know, they were absolutely... Like, I remember there was one, I think it was an LA Lakers game, where the whole arena just, yes, 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 and it was just... Holy crap, like Daniel Bryant, the WWE created that. So, an absolutely great moment. 2014, kind of same theme with Daniel Bryant coming through, called The Miracle in Bourbon Street. And this was, of course, the time where Daniel Bryant became the world champion once again, this time for a little bit of a longer time, defeating both Batista and Randy Orton in the main event, defining the true, you know, the childhood dream, you almost want to call it, his version of Shawn Michaels' childhood dream. You know, once again, through everything, going through 2013 to 2014, it was a big battle, you know, just removed opportunities, Triple H and the Authority, especially Triple H, just not having any faith in Daniel Bryan. And if anything, you know, Triple H doing everything he can to prevent him from getting into that spot. Even though the crowd loves him, I'm not going to let it happen. Even went as far as, if you want to be a part of the main event, you got to get through me. And the kickoff show on WrestleMania that year, or WrestleMania 30, was Triple H versus Daniel Bryan. A great match, which Daniel Bryan won, got to the main event, had his ribs all beaten up, all taped up, but Batista, Orton, and Daniel put on a great show, especially too, where at some points, Batista and Orton kind of teamed up, and it was almost a little bit of a two-on-one time there, and it was a beautiful moment, you know, watching him hold up the titles, you know, just, it was... The last time I saw a moment such as that was 1996, WrestleMania 12, Shawn Michaels beating Bret Hart in the Iron Man match. You know, we've had lots of moments in WrestleMania, but for me, when I think of that, oh my goodness, this whole build turned into something so beautiful. It's been that long since, and we haven't seen it since. And of course, that same night in 2014 at WrestleMania 30 was the same night we saw Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker streak. In an unfortunate match, it was good for a lot of parts, but then once when he got his bell rung, you could see The Undertaker was completely out of it.
Yeah.
Definitely a couple weeks ago when Steve Austin had The Undertaker on the Broken Skull sessions, watch it. It's great. The Undertaker talks about it all. Great, great behind the scenes of Mark Calloway, the wrestler. 2015...
Let's get into
the second half of the decade that Kyle might remember a little bit more, or will remember a little bit more. Of course, 2015, the big highlight was the heist. Seth Rollins holding onto that Money in the Bank briefcase since 2014 and cashing it in the main event of WrestleMania, pitting Roman Reigns, turning the Roman and Brock match into a triple threat match, and getting that curb stomp and kind of making his way in there. You know, the cool thing was, even earlier in the night, Randy Orton and Seth Rollins had a great match. Randy Orton defeating Seth Rollins with that amazing reverse curb stomp into lifting him up in the air, turning into an RKO. And what was great about it, when we were talking about it before we started recording, was Seth had been holding on to that briefcase for a long time into 2014, since 2014. Even though he held it everywhere he went, what he was doing with the Stooges beside him, the Authority and everything else, you know, you kind of forgot he was the Money in the Bank briefcase holder. Plus, at this point, a Money in the Bank briefcase has never been cashed in the main event of WrestleMania. So no one thought it would have happened. You know, save that moment for a normal Raw or SmackDown, or maybe a lowercase pay-per-view. But it happened, and it was a swerve, especially, too. Brock and Roman were in the middle of beating the crap out of each other, having actually a really good match. So, turned something. The crowd loved it. The arena blew up. Seth Rollins, first time world champion.
So, I will tell you that, in just thinking about it, this might have been the first WrestleMania that I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, I think so, because growing up, we didn't pay for pay-per-views.
Right.
And we didn't have a digital box, so we didn't...
The black box.
Yeah, and even as I was older, when I, you know, when I, by the time I stopped watching, I still never watched them. So I think this was the first one, and it was, I think it was a free preview or whatever, and I was like, oh, yeah. And so, you see Daniel Bryan retain, you know, get the Intercontinental title in that crazy ladder match. It was also my first experience witnessing an outdoor event.
Right.
So it was an interesting one, because, like, the daylight and how much differently things changed over the course of the day. And
oh, yeah.
How much you have to adjust to what you're seeing. Yeah. Because I remember...
Mood changes, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I remember watching that Seth Rollins one, and I still think to the day it was one of the craziest things I've witnessed.
Oh, yeah. Because it was all in a short period of time. Boom. He ran out and... just cashed it in. It's now a triple threat. And, oh my goodness. Kind of flips. You know, doesn't go Seth's way for a little bit. And Brock's holding him up for an F5. Roman spears Brock. But then he kind of curb stomps, gets him out of here.
Yep.
And then boom. And it, what's nice is in one of the interviews, you know, months later, talking about the Shield, they kind of talked about the moment. And there's a moment where when he was pinning him, and everything was going so crazy, there was a moment where Seth wrapped his arm around Roman's head, and he was like, thank you, because he took this moment from Roman.
Yeah.
You know, this was Roman's time. His build is against Brock Lesnar in the main event of WrestleMania 31. You know what I mean? And Seth's kind of the idea to put, because apparently it was Roman that was supposed to go over. But then, you know, so always great to see that. 2016, divas become women. Nothing wrong with a diva, but definitely when it came to the landscape of WWE and how they were shaping their female women's division, it was time for the diva to go. You know, because women can stand alone. They don't need to be titled as something, anything specifically other than who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, WrestleMania 32, Lita announced at the beginning, kick off that, and divas are gone, and she revealed the new WWE Women's Champion, and at that point it was the Raw Women's Champion, but we didn't really have one or the same yet. That night we had Becky Lynch versus Sasha Banks versus Charlotte Flair. Charlotte was the Divas Champion walking in. She retained and became new Women's Champion. What was really cool about this is that, you know, even though, you know, there might have been lots of moments that happened, because, you know, at the same point, this is the 2016 was the same year Shane McMahon returned after being away for a long time. Goldberg returned after being away for a long time. AJ Styles debuted as number two in the Royal Rumble. Like, that's crazy. And Daniel Bryan retires, you know, obviously, as we know now, temporarily. But a big year. But when it comes to big moments, the women moving the direction, not because it's, oh, we need to be more diverse and we need to treat women more right. It's because they deserved it, because they had the competitors to do it. So
I also think it was a fantastic match.
Great match.
And, great match. You know, I know that the, is it the 24 that they covered the Women's Evolution?
Yep.
And even the build-up, and even all the women knew the importance of this and how special it was. And it was neat to see when they announced it to the women that they were going to get rid of it. And, you know, they're... And even all those moments as they go forward, and you see the pure joy as they tackle those next steps, and that they really do want to see a change, and they really value the opportunities to make that change.
Right. No, that's a very good point. And, yeah, because definitely, obviously, the The talent has changed immensely, mm-hmm. you know, and obviously there was a time where the diva worked. Your Nikki Bellas, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Your more girly girls, your Candice Michelles, your Alicia Foxes, and your Caitlyn's and stuff like that. But now when you have your Becky Lynch's, your Sasha Banks, your Bayley's, your Charlotte's, your, heck, even Carmella, you know, Nikki Cross, Alexa Bliss, Nia Jax, wherever she's coming back soon. Double knee surgery, there we go. But no, great moment overall. 2017, this one's, that's got to be the top of everyone's list. The Festival of Friendship. Kevin Owens and Y2J's lovely little balancing act of French, you know, ultimate friends to ultimate foes. You know, you looked at how long everything was to... You had lots of highs and lows in between of, did you think they were going to break apart? Did you think that they were going to be together? Did you, you know, because there were moments where you thought they're going to break up. And he's going to cost him the United States champion. He's going to cost him the Universal title. But no matter what, they always found a way to swerve. Even if at one point where you thought they were split up, it was made to use as a swerve. Brilliant work between Kevin Owens and Y2J, especially the Festival of Friendship. Very Jericho of him to do, where everyone's, you know, all the females coming down, very Vegas themed, you know, it's, you know, getting every, you know, but then Kevin not really being into it, being like, this is not me, dude, like, we can be friends, you don't need to do this. Like, no, we're celebrating our friendship. And then Kevin Owens hands him, I got you a gift, ended up being the list of KO, beat the crap out of him. Where even though there was times where we kind of saw it coming, they reminded us that it wasn't going to happen. So this was a big swerve and something that I'm very happy that I have the little Mattel set. You know, very, very fancy. But no, I thought that was a great, beautiful storyline, well told. And sad to see those two no longer being together, but I think it was better for the both of them in the long run.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed it. That whole storyline. You know, you're right, like, are they going to be together? Are they not going to be together? I think that it's unfortunate because of their chemistry was so good, and they even fed off each other in a more impromptu way that it felt really natural, that it's unfortunate that, you know, it had to come to an end. But, right. I get it that some things, you know, can go on. But, I mean, I was there at Raw when Seth Rollins was facing... Kevin Owens, and Jericho came out in a Sin Cara mask.
Oh, right.
And, you know, that, like, I remember being there and experiencing that, and even all the stuff that Chris Jericho has talked about it after the fact, and how they really seem to enjoy doing it, it was really, really well done. And So my only hope is that there'll be more of those opportunities. Not as this doesn't necessarily have to be between these two guys, but there'll be other opportunities to kind of have those type of storylines where you really don't expect what ends up coming.
Right.
And you don't expect Kevin Owens to kick living shit out of Chris Jericho and smash it through TVs and whatnot.
Oh, 100%.
It was like a truly surprising ending to that friendship.
No, it really was. And I think the thing, too, is when you look at... Why is it important to build storylines? Because it's important to get people invested into what you're doing or not doing. You know, it's when you're doing these short little things and something happens, it's not very shocking. You know what I mean? It's like, it's maybe not a great example, but it's for the whole Lana Rusev Bobby thing. They've been predictable the entire way. When Bobby beats you, he's going to propose to me. Bobby, here's the ring, propose to me. They propose. We're going to get married. They're going to get married. You know what I mean? So it's kind of, and the whole, like, Rusev coming out of the cave, that's not the swerve. You knew it was going to happen. Yeah. Why wouldn't it happen? Would they just get married and that's it? No. Now, the Liv Morgan thing was a little bit more of a swerve because we didn't think that was going to happen. We didn't know that was going to happen. But when you invest in these longer, storylines, when something happens, it helps... You kind of think, yes, this is going to happen or this won't happen, or suspend your disbelief and go, what will happen? I don't actually know. You know, so when something big like that happens, you're more surprised. So, and also in 2017, that same year, Roman Reigns defeated The Undertaker and handed him his second loss at WrestleMania.
to me, I've said this before, and I'll say it again, man, I love being a turtle. No. This was the most fitting ending of a retirement, I think, ever. Maybe not, or the Shawn Michaels where he apologizes to Ric Flair before he kicks him in the face. but
I'm sorry, I love you. Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that, like, he was passing the torch in all the right ways. They had a short, because it was literally from WrestleMania, from Royal Rumble to WrestleMania, build up.
Yep.
But it worked. And it was, it would have just been very fitting. The hat, the coat, the gloves, all in the ring. Everyone is, you know, upset, but I think everyone could see it. It made sense. Where I think him showing up continuously over and over again, I think is really kind of taking that moment and being like, well, what was the point of it? Also, though, it did lead to one of the best segments I've seen in a while on the Monday after, which would have been a perfect opportunity to turn Roman pure heel when he just goes, it's my yard now, and all the booing.
Yep. Then he just sat there.
Yeah,
and he just
it was
left.
Incredible. And it would have been a perfect opportunity to turn him heel.
100%.
But, you know, I think that in terms of Taker, I think you're going to end up being like Shawn Michaels, where he eventually he's just going to stop showing up. And people are like, oh, okay. Whereas maybe that poetic ending would have been the cap, the truly perfect cap to an incredible career.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, once again, going back to the Broken Skull sessions, he talks about it. You know, Mark Calvary's like, you know, in the eyes of everyone, I've retired a bunch of times. I've never said I was done. You've said I was done.
I feel either that or he retired the gimmick. That was one of the two things that should have happened.
So here's the thing. So then Stone Cold's like, well, that moment and everything. He's like, and then he's like, you know, we thought you were done. He's like, and I thought I was too. But
the money.
The thing is that he's like, why does a career need to end? Why can't it just kind of live forever and it can just go away one day?
Because I think people like the idea of being able to share in that moment that we can celebrate this career. If you keep showing up over and over and over again,
tell the guy that, right? It's easy for people
to say.
Yeah,
100%.
But, you know, and that's where he made a slightly decent argument to go, that's easy for you to say, I've been doing this for 40 years. Like...
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? Like, it's
he doesn't
know
anything else.
I don't
know
anything else but to do that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, I do it, and you know, it sucks the next morning. I'm sore, but then I feel better. I work out. I get stronger. I get better, and then I get the itch again.
So he's really doing it for himself. You know? He doesn't really give a shit about anybody else, but it's not a negative.
Yeah, I would say in a non-negative way, yes. You know, because I think he'll be done. He's the type of guy where if he's old, he'll stop doing it when he literally can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's... And I think what sucks
is... Are we going to see him at, like, GCW? Or GNW, sorry, Great North Wrestling? Are we going to see the Taker at Great North Wrestling at 85 years old?
And I don't think... And I love Devin. I don't think Devin can pay him enough money for that. I think he's too expensive. Apparently they pay, like when he goes to like Wizard World, apparently they pay him like $50,000 to go sit there for an hour and not take bumps. All right, moving on, only 2 years left, 2018 and 2019. Both have very similar themes. In 2018 was the year of the man, Becky Lynch. You know, of course, Becky was on everyone's radar for many, many years, you know, kind of climbing up. And her move from NXT to the main roster, you know, Becky was never an NXT women's champion. You know, she was on the main roster for a good amount of time, and she was never anything other than, oh, look, the steampunk girl, you know, attractive redhead, good in the ring. But storyline, promo, it was never something for her. You know, obviously, where this whole year came up was the build to Survivor Series with Ronda Rousey. You know, Becky versus Ronda was supposed to be the match. You know, it was kind of the Raw and SmackDown invasion. Invasion happened. Nia Jax punches Becky in the face, breaks her nose, makes her unable to actually wrestle because she's still healing.
But added to the lore of the man.
Right.
That image.
Oh, hell yeah.
There, bloody faced.
she was completely concussed, but she's up there, bloody face, blue tank top, holding her hands out, just in that, like, just that suave look, smoldering, like, I am the man. You know, even though Charlotte stepped in, Becky and Ronda on social media, on TV, they kept taking jabs, they kept building it up. While Becky was away, the fans wanted her even more. So when it did end up happening, you know, when she came back from her injury, and she came back with, I am the man, you know, and I remember Mick Foley was one of the first people to comment going, that's genius. That's genius. She's the man. Unfortunately, apparently Ric Flair just sued WWE saying, but I'm the man, and wanted something like $50 million for, like, of royalties, because that shirt wouldn't have sold as much if he wasn't the man. Ric Flair's, I don't know, I love Ric Flair, just, like, well, you can't, I want to be in this family, but I'm going to sue you.
Yeah, and try to because get he's always like hustling. This. It's kind of that, some wrestlers have that mentality. They're always looking for the next dime.
Oh, I'm sure Triple H probably called him, and they're probably like, listen, okay, we'll throw you something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But relax. Shit, man. Like, apparently he was, like, half on his rocker on, like, some radio show going, like, I should sue him. You know what? I'm actually going to sue him. And then he sued him.
Yeah.
Like, just being like, you're part of the company. Shut up. Like, just easy, old man. But no, that was great. So, of course, 2019 kind of segues into the same type. The women's main event in WrestleMania. You know, Becky versus Charlotte versus Ronda. You know, they earned the spot. It wasn't given to them. They earned it because they were the hardest working on the roster. And what's funny now is we look back, and it was one of the greatest moments of 2019. Was one of the greatest moments of the decade. And what's funny is it goes to show how it's like Kofi. We don't talk about this pull and pull, you know what I mean? We remember him for the moment, the gauntlet, and the world championship. We don't always remember that Becky was pulled out and Charlotte was put in. Because that's the golden person who should be facing Ronda at WrestleMania. And then Charlotte is out, but then Charlotte's in. And then Becky faced Charlotte to get Becky back in. Becky wins, but then she's not in. But the whole point of winning, then Ronda comes out on Raw going, I want her in, and then she's in. Like, there was, while we were going through that story, there was a lot of, what? We didn't even want Charlotte to have anything to do with this.
Yeah.
Ironically enough, it's funny how we can look back now and go, would have we had it any other way? Maybe Becky and Ronda one-on-one, but it kind of still made the moment good.
It's funny, though, because it reminds me a lot of Daniel Bryan winning WrestleMania 30. In that they brought in another guy. They brought in Randy, I think, right? To make it a triple threat? Or was they bringing in Batista?
No, well, so Randy was a champion. Batista won the Royal Rumble.
Right. But they brought the three of them together because I think they were concerned that Batista couldn't carry the match.
So I think what it was they wanted Daniel there. I think that I think they knew that's where they wanted to go. I think the crowd being behind Daniel Bryan definitely made that happen. But I think what they wanted was Batista versus Randy Orton for the world title at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Like, so.
So I think this is kind of the same thing, right?
Right.
They couldn't. I think that Becky and to some extent, I'm sure the writers or whoever it was, and the fans were the reason why that did so well and were the reason why were the successes. I don't think it was Vince being like, hey, you're now going to cheer for Becky. No, this was like, hey, we're gonna take off the reins and we're gonna turn you heel. I think that people hated Charlotte so much, the fans hated Charlotte so much that they couldn't possibly cheer against Becky when she kicked shit out of Charlotte.
Oh yeah, if anything, that made them love Becky even more.
Exactly. Yep. So I think that was the idea too. Is that I think Vince always wanted Charlotte as the person that's going to make this statement match, main event WrestleMania. I would have personally rather them waited to announce that they were going to main event until main event, instead of announcing it very much earlier. I think it just would have brought even a more
excitement. Don't say it's going to be Becky versus Ronda. Build your way there. The ins and the outs, and then go, okay, well, here's where we're going to end up. Well, you know what? Screw it. You, Ronda, you want Becky. Becky, you want in. We're pulling here. Vince, you want Charlotte in. The three of you are going to face each other at WrestleMania.
Yeah. And then hold off on saying it's going to be a main event until, like, the night before or whatever it is, or have a specific thought or segment that says, you know what, there is nothing bigger than us. There's nothing bigger than this match. And then, you know, whether it's whether they're selling it to Vince or whatever the case may be. But that's besides
the point. They didn't announce it main eventing right away.
No, but
they did fairly soon to the event. They did.
That's yeah, when
they,
I just like, feel maybe like it was kind of like, I don't know. I just feel like the announcement should have been bigger.
No,
I
fair
like
enough.
Kind of like hey, by the way,
we should be able to sit here and talk about the moment and when it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're definitely right.
But I think that you know Becky has. I think after two belts, I think she, similar to Kofi. And when Kofi got his moment, which is funny because we don't even talk about it necessarily.
Right.
Because Becky's was so monumental in terms of the whole landscape of wrestling.
Right.
But they are better suited chasing.
Yeah.
I think that Becky as the man is not the same anymore. Because she's the champ now, so she goes out, so she's... I don't know if she's trying to be like a badass version of John Cena, where it's like, I'll take on anybody.
I think by now we don't need to say Stone Cold or Cena. I think she's
in terms
Becky
of like,
Lynch
I'll just
now.
Take on anybody.
Right. I think she has, but I see what you mean. I think that is what she's doing.
I just don't think she's, I don't think it's as successful as when she was a woman on a mission. You know, she had Jesse on her side.
Right, right.
Yeah. It's the same thing with Kofi, right? Like,
yeah.
Once he became champion, I just don't find he had the right opponent to really carry on that momentum. And I'm concerned that Becky is going to get stuck in that as well, where she's going to, eventually it's going to fall off. And it'll probably happen after she reassigns her contract to some sort of massive amount of money. Probably. But that's, you know,
yeah,
that's
I know what you mean. And it's hard because no matter what, whoever we want to get there, it's like, for example, you know, we all wanted The Fiend right away to be champion. Now look at us now. And now we're petrified of him losing the championship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And what's going to happen is that he will lose. I think he's going to lose to Daniel Bryan. And I think only because I think you need to put a halt to The Fiend train just a little bit. I think putting the title on him was way too early.
Yeah, I agree.
If anything, you could have put a different title. Have the Intercontinental title on him or something. You know, it's... Because what's going to happen is you can't have this ultimately undefeatable person ever, you know, for a long... Because what's going to... Like, here's what I think would happen. I know we're getting off track here, but I think Daniel Bryan can... I hope if Daniel Bryan beats The Fiend, people don't backstab Daniel Bryan. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like, oh, we wanted The Fiend. You can't have one or the other, right? It's just... Yeah. You know, and people, the fans, and I guess my point of bringing this up is the fans need to decide whether they're behind someone or not,
yeah.
Purely because you like them or you don't. Not this, because to your point, like, we need to get someone, you know, with Kofi. You know, we were behind Kofi regardless. We're not looking back on going, his run was absolute trash, Kofi's trash. We're not doing that. It is fair to say, and because you're right, little bit of Seth, Samoa, AJ Styles. He had a couple of feuds there, but nothing too big. If I can go back, would I rewrite that differently? I'm with you, 110%. But I hope they treat the new stars. And it's like, Becky has been the champion since WrestleMania.
Yep.
She has been the Raw Women's Champion since WrestleMania. You know, so she's going to have to lose at some point. You know, so I hate of this, you know, this whole when someone loses, it means screw you. It's like what happened to Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
You know, like, we want Daniel Bryan, but Roman won. But boo, screw you, Roman. You're dead to us. Well, hold on. You all wanted Roman.
Yeah.
Like, so I guess that's where I look at Kofi and Becky. I just really hope that when a time comes for them, you know, especially Becky, you know, I hope that people are still behind her no matter what. Because someone should be able to lose, like Kofi. I'll be honest, the Kofi thing, and I know I'm kind of jumping around here with my point, but my main point is being behind people, because even though he lost and everyone hated that Kofi lost, that same people that backed him also left at the same time.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, all right, so that is the decade review. moments from 2010 to the end of 2019.
All right.
So I say, how about we just take a really quick break?
Yep.
And then when we get back, let's talk about year-end review top moments in 2019 and also maybe some top fails in 2019 as well.
Sounds good. We shall return.
Hold on. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for holding in with us. All right, Kyle, so we've talked about the decade in review.
Yep.
That was a big one. Let's tighten it up a little bit. Let's talk a little bit more about, you know, this last year, the year we're most familiar with in WWE or in wrestling in general. So how about we go over the year-end review top moments in 2019 and also maybe a couple top fails, things we didn't like as much and why in 2019 too.
Sounds good. So we talked about it right after the right before the break. Kofi Kingston, his whole thing, his whole year.
The whole thing.
Well, that's not true. Let's be honest. Probably half the year. Because you have to figure in that April is when he... So the first half of the year was really where he got out of the rise. The rejuvenation of single superstar Kofi Kingston.
Right. No, yeah, the gauntlet before WrestleMania, getting him in there, going through a few gauntlets.
Yep.
You know, his performance in the gauntlets itself were absolutely amazing. You know, and especially, too, you can't, even though we could obviously talk about his WrestleMania win against Daniel Bryan for the world title, huge moment that will never be forgotten. But, of course, you know, you can't take away his time in the New Day.
Yep.
You know, being, you know, even though, you know, it's been a year, you know, a couple, I think it's been 5 years now that the New Day has been together, I think.
Pretty close.
Because I think they just had a 5-year anniversary thing I remember seeing on the Up, Up, Down, Down. But you know, like the several times tag team champions, you know, both Raw and SmackDown, and you know, they've been a consistent unit. People love them when they see them. They're hilarious. They're always finding new ways to reinvent themselves. And so I'm definitely a big fan of Kofi.
Yeah. I find it very interesting that how the New Day started,
right?
Which was supposed to be a heel.
Yes, that's right.
But they were so annoying. They were funny.
Yeah.
And they just turned.
New Day sucks, turn into New Day rocks.
Yeah, yep. And so, yeah, I think Kofi even, so he held the belt for like 6 months?
So April, May, June, July, August, September, October, so 7 months, yeah. So beginning of April to October when they debuted on Fox.
Yeah.
So several months. Yeah, you're right.
So I think that he's done very well. I think that, you know, we talked about how his... You know, maybe his star wasn't as bright now that he had kind of accomplished what everyone wanted him to accomplish. But
right.
I think there's something to be said, though, that they still kept the belt on him for 6 months.
Yeah.
And I think this has been, I think for him, it's probably got to be one of the best years of his career.
Yeah, and if anything, one of many, I think. You know, I look at, and just because you can look back on this one reign, it's like John Cena, 16-time world champion. Randy Orton, 14-time world champion. Triple H, 14-time world champion. They had, not all of the reigns were hitters. Right. So I think my hope is this is one of many for Kofi. And later on in his career, we can look back to go, oh, like remember when Kofi conquered the Beast at WrestleMania?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like maybe there's something in there to... Yeah. You know, to do something a little bit more. And because you're right, and don't get me wrong, Samoa Joe, great. And Samoa Joe was kind of he's on the up and up now. His time on the commentating desk has been great and coming back as a performer. But he was kind of in the mix middle. We didn't see the Samoa Joe that took on AJ Styles and got personal with his family. And, you know, so we kind of saw so. And then the one little half match we saw against Seth Rollins. And so you're right, it was a great run. He was a great champ, but. There was no really memorable storylines of defending the belt.
Yeah.
So.
Speaking of Daniel Bryan, he is also one of the top moments. So I think we might slightly disagree when I make the statement after. But so we talk about him coming back.
Yep.
And coming back full time. And him winning the championship over AJ.
right? Yep. Yep.
And that's when the kind of the Eco Warrior started coming, the Eco Champ. And they had some great chemistry, especially the promo stuff, talking about how they're all fatty boo baddies and all this other stuff. And we move...
Fickle!
That's right, Fickle!
Yeah.
And I thought that was fantastic.
Amazing.
I don't think he ever got his rematch against Kofi after WrestleMania.
I don't think so either.
Right.
Right.
I think that Daniel Bryan would have been a great person for Kofi Kingston to carry on a little longer with.
Yeah, that's true. Because they do have a little bit of a storyline leading up to WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But maybe a post, a revengeful Daniel Bryan wanting his title back. No, that's a very good point.
And then we slide into this, which we'll mention later too.
We could talk about this as a low.
Yeah.
We could talk and toss in the highs and lows.
So the joining Eric Rowan, which was okay.
Was good for the time.
Yeah. I think they got a little lost in where they were going with it. I think they would have been better off just letting Daniel Bryan do whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
Because I think his heel turn was fantastic.
Oh, and he's great on the mic.
Yeah.
Great on the mic.
And then this weird Roman storyline. So I don't know. Obviously, they had this thought process, and I think once the first part failed, they were like, it's too late. We're already gone down this road.
Something happened that turned it off.
Yeah.
And they just ended it. Oh, it wasn't actually Rowan. It was this guy.
Yeah.
But no, it was Rowan all along.
Yeah.
Smacks Rowan. How dare you? Like, I actually thought you were telling me the truth.
I feel like it was a very Vince Russo type swerve.
You know, Vince Russo is on Twitter. Like, begging AEW. Like, he put something, like, the other day being like, Tony Khan and Cody, you have 5 hours until my offer's off the table to give you free advice on how to make your show better. Don't say I'm not looking for free publicity or a job. I'm doing this for you. And he keeps trying to get in somewhere. And
wow. So, like, I think that was the problem. I think they changed directions really quickly and then kind of just needed to end it. But I think that was where they also lost him as the heel.
They did.
And I think it's really unfortunate. I think that he's been in this past year, he's been better heel than he was not. And the return of the Yes Movement, which is nice to see, but I don't know if it has the same impact as pre Daniel Bryan.
So I would say we're not at a disagreement.
Okay.
So I think for me, I think maybe where we see differently is I don't mind seeing the Yes Movement back maybe as much as you hope it was the other way. But I do agree that was a missed opportunity with continuing. The only thing I try to think of is if he did continue as the Eco Champion, how deep could you go with that, actually?
Well, I mean, I think that was the problem, too, is that the groundswell of support for Kofi really killed it, because you had this new belt, you spend money, whatever, to create this new belt, and then you kind of get like, oh, it's almost like an oh crap. Oh yeah. You know, it's almost like an oh crap, right? Because the groundswell of support for Kofi was too big to ignore.
Right.
And if you didn't give him his WrestleMania moment, no other moment would have done. Even if you won Money in the Bank, be like, no, we shouldn't wrestle with you. So I get it. But I think, I mean, they were pretty quick. Oh, I also didn't really like that when Kofi won, they already had the belt ready to go.
So that even though what they could have done a lot more was leading up to, they could have played it at least as more of a, we are so confident we brought this, and then have Kofi be like, man, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Like, if that's not a bad omen, you know what I mean? Like, what is?
Yeah.
So I do agree, I think, that itself, because right after he won, they're all dancing, and then just lifts it up, and there's the title back, and it's like, oh my god.
So, I'm a bit concerned with the Yes Movement, but I think it's what people, like, the fans, at least for the television fans,
and I think and as much as I'm with you, I would prefer to see where this could have went, I think the WWE right now needs a Daniel Bryant.
Yeah.
Yes Movement.
I think it's also tough when you're looking at The Fiend and who is he going to face to build a storyline around.
Yeah.
If it's not Seth, then it's Daniel, and it makes sense, but I guess that's how you have to sacrifice
You do.
Something to get this.
Yeah. Oh, you want me to say one?
Yeah, go
oh,
for
I'll
it.
Say one too. Sorry. So obviously Roman Reigns, you know, when we were talking about this ahead of time, we were kind of talking about the timing of Roman Reigns returning after beating leukemia. And, you know, we kind of thought our dates were a little off, but it absolutely lands in 2019. So we definitely have to say it. You know, Roman Reigns, you know, obviously the great match at WrestleMania coming back against Drew McIntyre. Staying out of the main event, I think, has been very smart. Because mm-hmm. even now, he's been everything that everyone wants him to be.
Yeah, they don't hate him anymore.
They don't hate him anymore, but they don't love him as much as he did when he first came back. He's getting the Cena yaboos. Dunna, yeah. It's almost like, yes, it's Roman. We boo Roman.
It's not like the other way where it was like very much boo.
Very much so, yes. But of course, the biggest thing, you know, and if anything, it has to be the top moment in 2019 was seeing Roman come back after defeating leukemia. You know, beating cancer's ass.
Controversial opinion.
Oh God.
Did he even have leukemia?
WWE does not need to do that.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. I knew it. But I'm telling you, if they wanted to turn him heel, that's the damn best way to do it.
And yeah, and if anything, you know, and I know we're like when it comes to the top moments and the fails or missed opportunities, we don't need to say them in any specific order. But I'm also going to say that I think definitely in 2018, and we talked about it earlier, and you made a great point. And we've always felt this way. Roman Reigns needs to be the heelish of heels you've ever seen. You need to let him turn it on. Because here's the thing. He's the good guy everyone loves. There's nothing anyone loves about a 6'4", built, handsome, strong, good-looking Samoan. No one likes that. You know what I mean? Like, everyone hates a guy. Imagine how he can just be that smuck, smoldering, just, like, do whatever he wants because he is who he is. I think Roman in 2020, I would love to see him go hardcore heel because I think he'd be really good at it. And I think when he does this whole, like, positive stuff, when he talks from the heart, he's good. But I think if he just grabbed that mic and just wanted to tell someone to go F themselves, I think he would do a really good job at it too. And lose the vest.
Lose the bulletproof vest. Has he ever not worn a bulletproof vest?
In FCW.
That's too long ago.
Yeah, but he's got a great build. Big, so he's got the same Rock Samoan tattoos. Yeah. I think it would look great. And if anything, have him have like almost like an Uso type look. You know what I mean? I think when you put Roman heel, because he can't be a good baby face until he's an awesome heel.
Yes.
Because you need to hate him first, then you can love him.
Yep.
So,
I'm surprised they haven't put him up with the Fiend.
I think you're
just out of forced.
That's going to be a very tough spot to put Roman in when he goes back up for a title. Just once again, complete side note, and we'll talk about it more next week and the weeks coming because we're getting into the road of WrestleMania, the road to the Rumble. I think you're going to see Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania.
I can see it.
I think Daniel Bryan's going to defeat the Fiend, and I think Roman's going to step up. And I think you could do a babyface versus babyface match. You got everything there. That's a great opportunity. You could do a baby, but I think when it comes to the heel, and this is kind of the reason why I'm bringing it up, Roman can just turn blasphemy heel and go, years ago was my moment. Everyone wanted me, but then you came back. And when you were eliminated in the Royal Rumble that I won that year, everyone booed the hell out of me. The Rock was there and they booed because of you. Like, because it actually is kind of true, because of Daniel Bryan's, you know, unfortunate shortcomings with his career, everyone wanted Daniel Bryant when everyone also wanted the Roman. The only thing is that they didn't want Roman more than they wanted Daniel Bryan. So that would be a great opportunity to turn heel and challenge for the title. So,
all right. Next on the list we have is the Wednesday Night Wars that we have coined. It's in proof. It's in our recordings. I think we did it in the 3 or 4 episodes ago or whatever. No, before. It must have been before the launch, so in October. So if anybody else uses Wednesday Night Wars, we'll sue for millions. AEW versus NXT. I think this is, obviously it will not be at the same scale as the Monday Night Wars.
Right.
But I think it's a show of... What's the right word? It's going to challenge WWE in talent management more so than anything else. So the right. big talk is Killer Cross. So Killer Cross finally got his release from Impact.
I heard that. And his wife, the blonde, the bombshell from Impact.
I didn't know it was his wife.
Yeah, they're together.
Oh, I didn't know
for fiance or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's training at the Performance Center right now. Yeah.
So they're talking about maybe he'd go straight into the quote-unquote main roster.
No, NXT.
But what I think is more of the show, though, is WWE's roster is so big. It's too big. And they can't sign all of these great talents.
Right.
They got to sacrifice some of this great talent and let them go to AEW. Let them go to New Japan. Do whatever.
Right.
Because they can't. So they're going to sacrifice. Or one in, one out. But then when you do that, you miss out on... It's Charlotte something or other.
No, I was trying to look for the ratings.
Oh. You know, when you bring somebody in, you got to let somebody go. And if you let go of your...
Something Bordeaux. Sorry.
Yes.
Yes.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, you know... You got to keep your Zack Ryders. You got to keep your Curt Hawkins. You got to keep your B team. These guys that can carry stories along.
Yeah.
And you don't expect them to win. You don't need them to win. But they're not squash matches. Because squash matches are great. They carry the story. They carry a character strength.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't carry a story.
No.
But if you don't have any C players.
Oh, you have to have them.
Right. Which is where the problem they're running into. Is if they keep going out and signing all these big talents. You're either sitting them in the performance center until they're ready to wrestle WWE style wrestling, which means there's a chance that you've lost some of their momentum. I would say DJZ is a prime example. The Carolina Caveman, Trevor Lee. These guys that were really hot outside, you bring them in, but they don't have it because they're not at that level, right? They're not at that higher tier mm-hmm. where you can bring them in AJ Styles like and just be straight fire right off the bat.
Yeah, I think it's also, and who knows, but maybe it's also, for example, like yeah, big fans of Trevor Lee, maybe it's also finding the right time and not just throwing him in there just because he's there. Right.
But that's the problem they're going to run into when they're trying to sign these guys.
No, you're 100% right.
Where I think AEW will have the advantage because their roster is kind of still up in the air. There is no way that Luke Harper doesn't show up at AEW.
Oh, God, yeah.
There's no way he
doesn't. There's Arn Anderson being released. Arn Anderson is now...
Exactly.
You know, he's doing his podcast, and he's now a producer at AEW. And
same thing with Dean Malenko. Yeah. Like, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So this war, for me, isn't so much about ratings, because I don't think ratings... They're too hard to judge now because all the different possibilities or methods to watch the content.
Yeah, it's fun to talk about the ratings, but every time that I do, whether we're together or you and I are taping separately, you know, it's still very important to state that it's not about the ratings, but it's important to kind of look at the ratings in regards to where are the eyes going. You know, like a couple of weeks ago, talking about how it's only been since October, but AEW went from 1.4 million. Viewers to 600,000 viewers. So yeah. Where the heck did those 800,000 viewers
go? Well, it's all the lackluster, right? It's all the luster has gone off, and so I think in the end NXT is going to prevail, but I think that's so because too. The base is stronger.
Yes, and it's good to have NXT because to your point, where are these people, and if anything, once again to your point, WWE can afford to not have to sign all of these people, but at least with NXT, you have your Performance Center, NXT, Raw, SmackDown. There are, with NXT now being on a major show, there is another home for people to get tucked and go into.
Yeah.
So, no, it's a very good point. Of course, this one we don't need to put too much into, but the Fox deal with SmackDown, we got Renee Young. What I love about it, and a lot of people were talking about it, going like, oh, she was taken off the announce table and she was shoved into WWE backstage. No, WWE backstage was her idea from Talking Smack.
Oh, I love Talking Smack.
So this, and if you've been watching WWE backstage, it feels like Talking Smack and some.
Mm-hmm.
They're being very edgy. They're talking about the hot topics. Nothing's off the record. You get CM Punk on there, Booker T, Renee, Paige, Christian. You get all the great guys, talking about the product, talking about what they can do differently. You know, it was like one of CM Punk's recent comments too, just being like, I dare you in 2020 to stop having someone jump off the top and falling into a pile of people. He's like, AEW, WWE, I dare you to stop doing it. Like, it's stupid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even this past week, Kevin, you know, just, it's all the time. It's always...
because yeah. Everyone likes the domino fall.
Exactly. But it's like, you're doing it too much. Yep. It's like the pull apart. You don't see it as much, but there was a moment a couple of years ago where every other week it was all the roster out there pulling two people apart.
Yeah.
Stop it. Use it every once in a bit, but maybe once, twice a year.
Yep.
Not every couple of weeks, but, you know, big deal. You know, Fox paying $4 billion.
It is a big deal.
To have WWE on TV, and obviously some highs and lows, you know, the debut show, you know, getting 4 million viewers and then dropping right down to 2 million viewers, and then Eric Bischoff losing his job over it. And, clearly, they needed to blame someone, and unfortunately,
it was Eric Bischoff. Well, I'm sure there's probably a little bit more to... It was probably the final straw in, oh, wait, maybe this isn't a great idea. Maybe Bischoff isn't really towing the company line that maybe Vince wanted, because Vince is still...
But it was the first show. Yeah. He didn't even give him a second show to do. So I feel
like there's probably more in there. But no, I think
But what's funny, when Bruce is talking about it, like, a little while back when it happened, you know, like, Connor was kind of being like, did they need someone to blame? You know, and even with JR was kind of like, they may have needed someone to point the finger at for that big change. Yeah. And he's like, I'm sure Vince probably put something in his bank account.
Yeah,
as a same. Sorry for wasting your time moving, relocating your family, and you know, it's but no, I think it's big.
It
because
is
because now WWE is looked at as a scale of NFL, yeah. MLB, NBA.
The show opening is very integrated into the Fox style.
Yes,
They had the WWE superstars on the Fox's New Year's Eve with Steve Harvey.
Yep. Yep.
I think that you're going to see more integration with them.
Where you saw a new 24/7 champion.
Which one?
Mojo Rawley.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. On the New Year's Eve thing together.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mojo won the title before... what was that? There was a big joke going around. Mojo won a title before someone else did.
Oh.
I don't know.
I mean, 24/7 really should be the... maybe that should be in a low. It should be the...
very good point.
The Paul Smackage championship.
Ooh.
Because... that's all the only way that seems to win, except for when the Stooges did it, and they actually did something decently different. Yeah. So, you know, up next is... it's an interesting story, but it is still a moment to note, is Dean Ambrose leaving.
Right.
And I think it really set the tone for AEW to be more than just... you know, an elite project. It really showed that there are some big names that are willing to go.
Right.
And they're willing to leave WWE and leave the money. Because let's be honest, other than the Young Bucks and Cody, nobody else is making WWE money.
No, I'm sure that's the whole elite thing where it's like you're coming and making big bucks over. But let's be honest.
You're not making
There's WWE no money. Way they're paying that kind of money their first year. You don't make money until your first couple of years
and
in.
And the Young Bucks only make money because they hustle all the time.
T-shirt sales out the young. Yeah,
so they're doing the hustle. But I think it showed that... Now, you know, you and I talk about... We talked before recording whether... Ambrose would have been as big of a deal if he wasn't part of the Shield.
Right.
Which, in my opinion, I think that he... Mainly because I don't feel like he really liked doing the mic stuff. I don't feel like he liked doing the WWE style of show. I think he'd rather just go and wrestle.
Dean was always very different. It's funny. Dean's the one person when you talk to in interviews and... He's more of like, he's been doing this for a long time, but only since 2012 has he been on the quote-unquote big stage. You know, and it's funny, Dean Ambrose, the one person that you talk to, and, you know, he's like, I hated the Attitude Era. He's so different from everyone else, and how he thinks and how he looks at things. Which, don't get me wrong, look at where he is now. He's created something great.
Yeah.
You know, he's great, and he could be a world champion in anywhere in the world right now. But you're right. Without Roman, without Seth, without the Shield, to your point earlier, you know, Roman, if he debuted on his own, could have he been something? Yeah, big Samoan guy, good-looking guy, good wrestler. Seth Rollins, he He's the new AJ Styles. You know what I mean? He's going to be one of the... Seth Rollins has the ability to be put on a Mount Rushmore. You know what I mean? Beside HBK 10, 15 years down the line.
Yep.
But Dean Ambrose, I think he could still be something big. But as big? Don't know.
I just hope that he doesn't... And I know he's already talked negatively about his WWE experience, but...
Yes.
He has to make sure that he gives credit to them for where he's at.
Which he does in that... what's that interview? He did an interview. His first interview when he was away. Talk is Jericho. After he had left and joined AEW. He did... So a lot of it... A big reason why he left was because of Vince McMahon. He absolutely credits everything that he has, meeting his wife and everything, to WWE. He wouldn't have the money in the bank. He wouldn't have this. Just, he wasn't happy anymore.
Yeah.
So if you're not happy, change it.
I think he'll come back.
I think he'll come back
once Vince is gone. I think you'll see some other guys will come back too once Vince is gone. And I think you'll see some guys leave when the expectation is different.
Well, look at what NXT is. It's not, from my understanding, it's not Kevin Dunn in the producer, you know what I mean? It's not Vince's boys, it's Triple H's boys, it's Jeff Jarrett, it's all the people he's put around him. I think Triple H is, if Triple H hasn't proven to be the second most hardest working person in the room, aside from Vince McMahon in wrestling, with all the things that he does on top of... in wrestling, it'll be a very sad day when Vince goes, because I do think it will be for him to pass away, for him to fully stop being out of it.
100%.
Even till today, they all say it, and Vince is 100% still completely in charge of everything. Nothing gets by without Vince's say. Do I think it'll be a landscape? Like, imagine AEW is still around and Vince McMahon passes away and Triple H gets full realm. To your point, I think you will see the Kevin Dunns and everyone retiring, moving on, you know, and then I think you're going to see heavy, heavy, heavy changes in everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a very good point. Survivor Series saved by NXT. You know, that was another big top moment. You know, obviously the big thing was, you know, the brand rebrand. You know, getting rid of the wild card rule. No, we're going back to true brand supremacy, Raw and SmackDown. But then right after they did it again, just around the corner, 5 weeks later, was Survivor Series. You know, where, once again, Raw and SmackDown, it's the one time of the year they get together. So the fact that they tied in this NXT angle, where it's NXT versus Raw versus SmackDown, really saved the brand split from being... still legitimate. And if anything, having NXT do as well as they did a lot of really good for NXT.
Yeah, it's tough because you run into that, there's still that weird, they're in a bit of a limbo because they run a live show like SmackDown does. They run it for 2 hours like SmackDown does. They run it on a same channel that Raw runs. So they're, for all intent and purpose, on the same level. But they're not treated like that.
Right.
So they still consider Raw and SmackDown the main roster.
It'll take time.
Yeah, so it's just how they're going to shape that. It'll be interesting going forward. But it won't happen until Vince goes, because NXT has a different feel to it.
Yes.
A very natural. It's not like bringing back ECW. It's a very naturally created feel to it. But you still say, hey, so-and-so is going to come up to the main roster. Well, what... I mean, you have Tommaso Ciampa said no.
Finn Balor said no for many years, and he got a lot of heat for saying no. And he was the one person that they continuously called up, and he's like, no, I want to stay. That's why when he had the opportunity to go back, apparently it was Finn's idea, send me back to NXT. I'll do it. I love it in NXT.
Yeah, so it's interesting how they're going to carry this through. But you're right. I mean, to have NXT have a strong performance, I think just helps legitimize and it helps grow NXT's brand.
Yeah, 100%.
So
no, 100% agree.
All right. So one of our favorite things of the year, with a potential caveat, is the Rebirth of Bray Wyatt. So, you know, we had these fantastic segments where he's got this, you know, fun house, and it's like this totally different thing. And there was a lot of build-up, which was good. It was slow.
What was it, like, 8-9 weeks of fun houses before? Yep.
And it was great. And then, you know, we also kind of hoped that there'd be opportunities, like maybe Luke Harper would show up as, like, a different version of Luke Harper, where he's, like...
Uncle Freddy.
Yeah, like, you know, like... And then the Fiend comes out. It's different. And it's needed. But at the same time, it's a very... fine line, and I don't know if they're on the right side of it with championing too quickly, the red lighting, where you go from here. I like the idea that the Miz faced off against Bray Wyatt, not the Fiend.
Oh, I love that, because everyone thought you were going to see the Fiend, and it went to show, especially leading up to, you've been seeing this battle where Bray Wyatt's kind of like, where did I get this title? And then him and the Fiend becoming one and the same. It's showing the progression between the character and how he doesn't always need to be the Fiend to be super unstoppable.
I still would have liked to have him split. I still would have... I thought it would have been amazing had the Miz come in. Had they not done the... I thought it was too soon to introduce Bray Wyatt, not the Fiend, as a bad guy.
Right.
I think it would have been great if they had... Instead, he faces off against the Miz, and Miz hits him, and he just starts crying. And it's like, why are you hitting me? What did I ever do to you?
Yes. It's like when Seth Rollins came to the Funhouse, and it was beating him. He's like, why are you doing this?
Yes.
So because he truly didn't know. Like, what did I do for you? Not knowing.
Yeah, so they should have kept that longer. I think
I agree with that. Very true.
So, but it's still a big character change. It's a risk, and it's a good risk to take. And so
it really
it's
is.
Definitely one of those things that stands out in 2010.
No,
I mean,
100%.
2019.
Talking about the decade. Kind of what I was saying before, and I know I kind of jumbled back and forth with my point about, you know, being behind stars. One thing that I can encourage all people to do is Bray Wyatt will lose. My only one thing is just let's go with storylines and having fun. You know, this world we live in where, you know, I almost fear if Bray were to lose to Daniel Bryant, everyone would be pissed that Bray lost, but everyone would be mad at Daniel Bryant for beating him.
Yeah.
It's almost, the sensitive culture we live in needs to go away. Enjoy things for what they are. No one in the history of professional wrestling goes undefeated. And people can lose, but still be on top. Mm-hmm. You know, we look at our Mount Rushmore. We think about our Hulk Hogans and our Ultimate Warriors and our Stone Colds and Rocks. And they've been defeated many a time, legitimately by many a people. You know, it's just be behind him when he loses. Because I think when Bray Wyatt loses will be when everyone needs to be behind him the most. I guess that's the main thing that I'm trying to say.
All right, so with every high, there's always a low.
Big lows.
So 2019 is not without its misses for the year.
Yes.
So, Mark, what's on the list?
So we have a lot of things, you know, and obviously there's some things that are bigger than others. I would say one thing for me, just to kind of talk about, would be Brock Lesnar as champion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, preventing stars from uprising. Really, you know... Like, for example, when we were talking about before we started recording, I get what they're trying to do with all of this, but I don't like it. Like, it worked years ago. Brock going away for 6 months and all of a sudden showing up, and they did it with Bruno Sammartino, they did it with lots of people, they did it with Andre, and it works. And it's a new, and it's something that we haven't seen in a long time, any organization having the guts to do that. So, hats off to WWE. Now... Brock Lesnar as champion isn't the draw. Brock Lesnar is the draw. Brock having the championship mainly for the last couple of years and showing up very minimally, that's where when we talk about the build-up, when we talk about too many big stars and not enough places to put them, I do believe that we have to point the finger at Brock Lesnar as champion as that. And think about this. Last couple months, we haven't seen Brock Lesnar as much. But you look at all these big superstars, Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens, and the list goes on and on. Kofi Kingston, Daniel Bryan, everyone, AJ, you know, just more and more come to mind. These, not all of them need to be in the title picture, but while there always needs to be two categories, the people that are, you know, going after the championship and the champion, and then the people that are next tier coming up to that point. They're all suffering right now because all these top stars have nothing to thrive towards before to get after Brock Lesnar. Brock, I think he just needs to drop the title. We thought when Roman beat him, that was it. But obviously, you know, I know with Roman having his leukemia term, they kind of threw it back on Brock. Unfortunately, clearly Braun Strowman pissed someone off in the office to make that happen, that crown jewel. But no, I just think Brock is amazing. I love him. Big fan. Just no championship is needed on Brock's waist. He is the draw. He is the ratings. Let's have the other people put a belt on, and that's where we can shape the divisions a lot more.
All right. So I think for me, one of the other ones is the use of your call-up talent. You know, you have your EC3, Lars Sullivan, you know, Sanity from before. And, you know, what we've ended up with is these C-rated people. When there was opportunity to build them up more. Aleister Black. Aleister Black is a prime example. Aleister Black fit NXT to a T. Did very well. And then bring him up and it just doesn't translate. Now, he has put on some fantastic matches with Buddy Murphy. But this whole darkness and spookiness thing just doesn't work.
Yeah, and when he came up to the roster with Ricochet and they were doing their tag team thing, that kind of worked.
Yeah, but it wasn't his gimmick.
No. But obviously it was a mix, because obviously Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa and Ricochet, you know, they were all supposed to come up together, but then obviously Johnny got hurt, or Tommaso got hurt, Johnny came down with them, they stayed, which I thought that was the right move. Don't screw up your, you know, any storylines or anything for no reason. But yeah, and it's like we talked about before, like Aleister Black, Survivor Series, where the hell was he?
Yeah.
Like, in the closet waiting for a challenge?
Yeah.
Like, why couldn't he just be there for the brand and just be like, screw that? Like,
yeah, and I know that like Lars is a little bit different because there's some other issues going on.
Yes, some of his past seem to be haunting him.
But it feels like Triple H has done a fantastic job building these characters and creating the buzz. And Vince wants the buzz while there still is buzz there, but hasn't really figured out how he's going to maintain it and brings them up. And now EC3 is nothing.
Which sucks.
He at least had something. He would be a perfect person to be going after the North American title.
As he was in NXT. Yes,
and then to bring him up for
nothing. Like, I remember that ladder match for the North American, when they crowned the first North American champion. EC3 was doing a great job in NXT. If anything, throw him back down there. You know, a lot of people make fun of him as the John Cena of the indies, like a lackluster John Cena. But EC3's good, man. Like, he's got the look, he's got the body, he can talk. Like, I think EC3 deserves a lot more than what he's gotten. And poor guy was on the major wrestling podcast with Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder. They were showing off his action figure, which I got. Really cool figure, by the way. Awesome figure. But he was kind of like, yeah, I have a figure.
Yeah.
The biggest thing I've done this year. Like,
yeah.
You know, you don't want to bury the company you work for, but at the same time, it's like, Jesus, why call me up if you're doing nothing? Goes to the point earlier, to your point, you know, when we were talking about transitioning from, you know, Vince and Triple H. Obviously, we're not looking forward to a day that Vince is no longer with us. But imagine what that will look like when Triple H has full realm of what the roster looks like.
Yep.
I think you'll see that transition work a lot better with the storylines. So,
anything else that tickles your mind?
I think a lot of the other ones we had down, I think we kind of covered throughout. We kind of talked a little bit about Drew before. Talked about Kofi, no rematch. We talked about Daniel Bryan and Rowan and Roman. Brock, you know, Bobby Lashley and Lana and Rusev stuff, you know, that's kind of current day stuff. So we could maybe wait until next week on that point. And, you know, the only other thing I would really bring up very quickly was Kurt Angle's retirement. I really wish they would have maybe done differently with his final opponent. You know, there was a lot of speculation that Kurt had asked Cena and Cena had accepted, but WWE just didn't do anything with it. And obviously we got what we got with Corbin, and look where Corbin is today. Would Corbin be where he is today as a hellaciously good heel if it wasn't for that? Who knows?
I think he still would be, but he always has that in his back pocket.
He does.
The
crowd, I retired Kurt Angle.
Every time he gets the boos. Yep. Right? He needs a boo, there it is.
Yep, I retired Kurt Angle. So that's my only other thing, but at the same time, there's not so much in it. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of meat to talk about other than that. So
if we, you know, to cap off, is there any other kind of moments of the past decade that you wanted to kind of highlight as something worth noting?
So the only thing I would really say is, you know, one common theme when you look at the decade, especially the early half of the decade, was CM Punk. You know, we got, you know, I know we talked about it a little bit before, but just to really high level it, you know, in, you know, June 2011, we got the pipe bomb. You know, from 2011 to 2013, CM Punk was the longest reigning modern day champion for 434 days until losing it to The Rock at the Royal Rumble in 2013. You know, Punk leaves WWE the day after the Royal Rumble in 2014 due to, you know, many, many reasons. And then we got the Colt Cabana podcast that blew up the world. Lawsuits, craziness, ending of friendships, CM Punk returns. So from 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, 16, 17, 18, we're talking about UFC, we're talking about lots of things. In 2019, CM Punk each year has been a topic. And even in 2010, he was the world champion, you know, at one point of the year. So CM Punk each year has had something to kind of trickle into the wrestling business. So I am happy to see him, I don't want to say back, because he's not back in WWE, but I hope to see maybe something happens there, because CM Punk seems to be open to it. So, but no, I thought that was a really cool piece of the decade. What about you? Do you have anything specifically?
So just a couple things. One, WWE still knows how to surprise you the decade. With returns, surprise returns, Brock Lesnar, Daniel Bryan,
Shane McMahon,
Rey Mysterio, the Hardys coming back,
yeah,
and the pop at WrestleMania for that one was massive. You know, Seth Rollins and cashing in the Money in the Bank, and Roman Reigns finally winning his world championship, only to have Sheamus come and take it away from him.
Right,
you know, like they still, no matter how much people shit on them, they still know how to get a good surprise in there, and I applaud them for that.
I think they know more behind the scenes than anyone gives them credit for.
That's right. The other one for me is the growth of independent wrestling. And Cody, in my opinion, Cody has a lot to speak for that. And because, you know, he left and he made this dream list. But more importantly, he showed up at, like, any event. Right. Any event, he was there. And people who know wrestling know Cody. His family is famous. And He also documented it on his social media. He was very heavy on
social
media.
Very much so, yeah.
So people were brought in and brought into that world. And I think it's really, over the course of the last year and a half, has really driven this influx of, you can make it on the independents. You know, you talk about the elite. They are just as responsible for, you know, for that component of being able to show you can make money and not be part of the big show.
Right.
I think they're a bit, obviously they've gone a different direction now with their AEW, but Impact Wrestling has finally found where they belong, which is a combination of independent and production. So you have these wrestlers that still go out and do other shows, but they have their own storylines within their Ring of Honor is going to have a struggle now that they lost the Elite.
Yeah.
But go to a wrestling show and you will see how on fire being at a wrestling show is.
Right.
A C4 show, an Alpha One show.
Great North Wrestling.
BLP in Black Label Pro. All these other ones that I follow a lot of independent wrestlers.
Ludo 7.
And they show me all these, you know, they show videos of all these things, and you can see how strong wrestling is.
Yep.
Even after this decade of ups and downs and the falls of other organizations and the falls of certain wrestlers and the rise of new ones. And it just shows to me that independent wrestling is still something to worth going to see, because you never know who you're going to see there, and then you never know where you're going to see them after. And you should really take the opportunities to get to know these people, to interact with them, and to see these shows before they get to the WWE level, and then it's just, it's too challenging for them.
Yeah.
I don't fault the wrestling WWE for not having enough time for their fans, because it's no longer 20 fans at a show. It's 200,000 fans, you know, that they have to try and interact with, and you can see that. Like, yeah. I get it. So, for me, that was the other highlight. It was just the growth of independent wrestling for this past, you know, 2 or 3 years, and a lot of that does have to do with Cody saying it's okay not to be in WWE. I can still do this.
Of course. Now, looking at the list that Cody made, it's funny to look back on it now. People on his list, Roderick Strong was on his list.
Mm-hmm.
Personal ring announcer.
I don't know that one.
I don't think that's a wrestler. I think that's, he just wanted a personal ring announcer. Shibata.
I don't know that one.
Don't know that one. Trevor Lee.
Yep.
Young Bucks.
Yep.
The streamers thing, the New Japan thing, yeah, when you Ring of Honor when they throw the streamers. Pat Buck from Create a Pro. Moose.
Yep.
The Miracle. Mike Bennett. Hero, Chris Hero.
Yep.
Kurt Angle, which they did. Bola. Don't know Bola.
I think it's a wrestling company.
Oh, maybe. Dalton Castle, which he did. And Adam Cole was the number one on his list.
Yeah. So I think it's, you know, it's just something to show, right? Like that you can achieve these things, and it's a great opportunity, and it's a great time to be a wrestling fan.
Oh, hell yeah.
So who knows where the next decade will take us?
No, 100%. And, you know, and I think I'm excited for 2020, because you look at where wrestling has transitioned, you know, to your point with the independent part, NXT, Raw, SmackDown, AEW, ROH, New Japan, Impact, you know, a decade plus later, they're still alive. You know, they're getting new life into them, and, you know, they have a new company backing them with more money, and, you know, they are doing a really good job at trying to create their own up-and-coming wrestlers, no longer dependent on, you know, Vince Russo goes back and goes, you know, back 10 years ago I had Impact, you know, or TNA at the time, they were at 2.5 million views. Yeah, but you had Sting, Kurt Angle, you know, like the NWO, you had Hogan, you had everyone there. Of course they were watching. It was WCW Lite, essentially. You know, so to see now Impact moving more and towards, like, Killer Cross. Unfortunate to lose a Killer Cross, but Killer Cross is going to hit the indies or a performance center or AEW or somewhere, and because he's really good. He's really, really good. He made something of himself. So, I think it's Scarlett Bordeaux, his girlfriend there, you know, she was kind of doing the whole, like, sexy dancer bombshell. But, you know, she has been working out at Seth Rollins' wrestling school for many years. And apparently Seth Rollins speaks wonders of her because she's really good in the ring. And so, but yeah, I'm really excited to see who's going to come in, who's going to come out, and just enjoy stories. You know what I mean? Enjoy stories, not get so caught up in the politics of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I'm excited for the future of this podcast too.
Sounds good. So the next coming weeks, we're going to, you know, keep up to date on what's currently going on in the world of WWE. We have Snowpiercer, which is the first show for C4 of the decade, which takes place on the 17th of January. You know, I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to help out a fellow C4 fan in ensuring that their streak continues. I was speaking with Valerie today, and she has said that she has not missed a front row in, I think, like 5 years, which is pretty impressive.
Just giving yourself the Barry Horowitz pat in the back.
That's right. That's right. I'm going to pat myself in the back a little bit. You know,
that's great. That's awesome.
It's an opportunity there. And so it's an exciting show that we'll be able to talk about. Yes. The second cruise of Jericho is coming, which I will be able to talk about when I get back, and let you know if I am a fool for doing it again or not. But we shall see. And then when I get back, we'll have Rumble. So I think it'll be an opportunity for you to preview the Rumble And then when I get back, we'll be able to talk about the Rumble.
Yep.
And lots to go for.
No, 100%. No, I'm looking forward to January. Looking forward to 2020. Thank you, Kyle, for being a great co-host. And yeah, I hope you guys had a great Christmas, holiday, Hanukkah, New Year's, whatever you celebrate. And we'll definitely check you guys out next week.
Well, once again, my name is Kyle.
And my name's Mark.
And you're listening to the Pro Wrestling, or you listen to, past tense, the Pro Wrestling Outshatter Show, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Are we still on Spotify?
As far as I know.
Oh, yeah.
So, once again, thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you guys next time.
Peace.